extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer for the last time as a duo. Matt Doyle is here. Big show coming up. MLS season price pricing details are out. Good news for all of you. It's not going up. Same prices in 2023. Best preseason things we saw this weekend. Brandon Vasquez balling. Two more goals for Monterrey. Emil Forsberg, heat check goal. And Christian Ramirez put Lucas Zelarayan's MLS Cup tattoo to shame. In transfer news, European window closes February 1st, and FC Dallas are doing work. They got $10 million burning a hole in their pocket. We'll deep dive their number nine target and the state of the roster, plus all the latest rumors, thanks to Tommy Scoops, Danny Musovski to Seattle, more Inter-Miami injuries, and more. Doyle, 23 days until MLS opening day. Inter-Miami RSL on a Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern on MLS Season Pass. We've got some injury news for Benjamin Kromoski. We've also got the 2024 home Miami kit. Togetherness with the number two. It's pink, very much so. It's also vertical with the crest right down the middle. How do you feel about vertical alignment and this Inter Miami jersey?
I think it looks sharp. I like the. I mean, anything with the pink, I think, is going to look good, because the one thing I really care about most with jerseys, with kits, is that you can immediately identify the team that you're seeing play. And a couple of years ago, remember, we'd be like, every MLS team was just like white and black. That was it. So to see these teams flex their muscles a little bit in terms of looking a little bit different, leaning into their primary colors, Miami's done that, and now they're leaning into a little bit of a different look as well with the crest right in the middle. I don't think there was a single team with that. No, Philadelphia had it last year, right?
LAFC, I think, had it too.
Okay, so there were a couple teams with that last year. It looks good for Miami. I just like that we're not going with the cookie-cutter templates anymore for these MLS kits. And Miami kind of leading the way, especially because they seem to be selling quite a few of them.
I don't think sales are an issue. I will say just a small detail, and these are the things that sickos talk about when you look at jerseys. The three stripes from Adidas, just plain. Three stripes, very clean, really like that. In theory, I'm not a vertical orientation guy. Mm-hmm. That's when you see the jersey and it's the mock-up, and you're kind of like, I don't know, that just doesn't hit for me, because I'm so used to having it over the chest plate with the crest. But when I saw all the pictures of all the guys, the Suarez's, the Jordi Alba's, the, you know, DeAndre Yedlin's, all these players in the jersey, that's where you have to make the true judgment. And the pink is perfect. It's truly representative of the city, the culture, what this team, this club is trying to be. And to your point, I think more and more MLS teams are starting to just say, let's be us. Like, what is going to land with our people? And let's try to take a few chances. I think we're going to see some third kits this year as well. You can see this new kit in four more preseason games for Inter Miami. Monday, today, January 29th, 1 p.m. Eastern. We're probably not helping you remember to watch this, but if somehow you did and you're listening now, congratulations. Al-Hilal in Saudi Arabia. Then on Thursday, Al-Nassr. That is the Cristiano Ronaldo matchup for Inter Miami and Messi. Then on Sunday, they're in Hong Kong against the Hong Kong team, very creatively named there. And on Thursday, February 15th, their final preseason matchup against Newell's Old Boys, a return to roots for Messi and Tata Martino. And we now know how much it costs to watch it all. I teased it. Price stays the same. It's flat. $14.99 per month during the season, or let's be real, just pay the $99 if you're not already an Apple TV Plus subscriber. Flat fee, every single game. Every MLS Next Pro game, every playoff game, every Leagues Cup game, the All-Star game, Campeones Cup. That's what you should be going for if you are listening to this show and you care about MLS in that way. $99 flat rate. And if you're an Apple TV Plus subscriber, it's going to be even cheaper, $12.99 per month or $79 for the whole season. Some details have trickled out here. There will be MLS Countdown returning. That's the pregame show in English. MLS Wrap Up, that is the postgame show. Should take you through the entire match week. And look ahead to the next one. Had so much fun being on that show last year. And then big additions in Spanish. MLS 360 is coming. En Español. Tony Churchy's going to host that one. He is so good. Miguel Gallardo, a good friend of the show, and Giovanni Savarese will also be alongside of him, doing what the MLS 360 crew did in English, which is watching all the games, helping you navigate a match night, getting you all the goals, and keeping you updated on what's happening in MLS. And then there's a new host of La Previa in El Resumen. That is going to be Antonella Gonzalez, who you saw on the sidelines a lot last year, especially around Miami games. So, yeah, season pass. Go sign up, get it done, watch preseason, watch all the regular season. Should be a good time. Speaking of preseason, Doyle, what's the best thing you saw?
Brandon Vasquez doing his thing. I expected him to perform well for Monterrey. He's got the measurables and he has the instincts. If you watch him in and around the box, he throws a double move every time. And if you do that, you're going to score 10 goals a year. At minimum. But what he's done in his two starts, he's scored 3 goals. I think the last foreigner to do that in Liga MX was Raul Ruiz Diaz, who of course went on to have a very good career there before having an even better one.
That was a nice little trivia poll right there.
But Weeby, the first goal he scored this weekend.
I was watching the game and with my son. I could not believe when the cross comes in. I'm sort of just like, well, what can you do with this? You know, he's making a run across the box. You can't even really call it near post. He's nowhere near the post.
No,
he's like by the 18-yard box line. Try to help me describe this goal. Cabezazo is what I was immediately thinking. Just, you know, that's like headed golazo.
But I think that is the right term. Right, because he's running across. He's basically the middle of the box. Like, he's not closer to the left or the right side. Like, he's kind of just running across the middle, and he has the defender behind him pinned. It's not a threatening area though. But the cross comes in from the left touchline. I think it was a left back who had pushed up, and he just whips in across the left touchline. And I mean, this is just as good a header as you'll ever see. I don't tweet much anymore, but I got into your replies and I said it's a Batistuta goal. You know, and of course you don't remember too young. Gabriel Batistuta was the Argentina's all time leading scorer before Messi. He was player of the tournament in 2 straight Copa Americas, and he's a legend in Fiorentina. To the point where, like, they built a statue of him before he was retired. While he was still playing, he had a statue. Like, that is the type of goal scorer he was. And he was famous for his ability to generate goals off of headers from every angle. Just impossible seeming stuff. And that's what this was, man. Like, it was absolutely absurd. Brandon Vasquez might not score a better goal in his entire life. It was incredible.
The way he looks over, you know, it's the looking over your shoulder where you understand where that back corner is. And again, if you didn't watch it, we're trying and failing perhaps miserably to help you see this in your mind's eye. He just sort of flicks it over his right shoulder perfectly into the upper corner side netting where the goalkeeper just has no chance but to flail. And to go to the Batistuta comparison, I can see that. You know, in my early days of becoming obsessed with soccer, and we're talking about like way back in 2006 for me, I was just mainlining YouTube. And Batistuta was one of the players that I found and just sort of honed in on YouTube. And it was the grace from Batistuta and just sort of the smoothness. And you're like, oh, well, bam, pace off of whatever contact he was able to get. And you saw that from Vasquez on this. I'm not saying he's Batistuta, but I'm saying this moment, he's not overexerting himself.
Yeah.
He is taking exactly the pace of the ball and the direction and the spin and understanding in that moment, this is the way to touch the ball. That's the essence of finishing. How do you touch the ball?
Yeah.
And just absolutely perfect. And then later on in the game, just, you know, finds himself in a channel, stays onside, good first touch back inside, right-footed shot, low beneath the keeper, was not the most quote-unquote perfect finish you've ever seen. A little bit of bobble on the ball. Who cares? 3 goals in 2 games for Brandon Vasquez. And by the way, he could have had more in this game.
Yeah, and that was the thing, right? Like, the second goal is the one that matters more, because the second goal came off a passage of play that I think is repeatable, where he's staying locked in as there's – I forgot who they were playing. Was it San Luis? They were playing they were transitioning from defense into the attack. Monterey, as they always do, were compact through the middle, forced a turnover. And Brandon Vasquez was just, he was smart. He was on his toes. He was ready for that transition moment. And as it happens, he immediately is able to, from his movement, create an extra 2 yards of space. And when he has that extra 2 yards of space in the box, look, he's not going to score every one, but he's going to score enough of them. That's what Monterey played for. And one of the fascinating things with Vasquez is I think he's a volume shooter. And I don't think that Cincinnati necessarily played that way last year. They were maybe a little bit more interested in match control at times. And I don't think that part of Vasquez, you know, I think he only scored 9 league goals last year. He scored 20 across all competitions, but only 9 league goals. Was he was trying to do his part in helping to sort of dictate the game a little bit, and also try to bring the other center forward into the game a little bit. And I thought he was good and unselfish last year. I think he's at his best in a situation where he's going to be the focal point and his job is going to be to shoot the ball. That is what Brandon Vasquez is, I think, most designed for. And with Monterey, because of the nature of Liga MX, like Monterey, Tigres, and Club America probably have twice or three times as large a salary budget as most other teams in Liga. Like, they're going to dominate games in terms of pitch control, even without the center forward dropping back in and linking play a ton. So he's going to be able to ride that line. He's going to be able to find chance after chance after chance. And if he finds chance after chance, like, it wouldn't shock me at all if he won the Golden Boot in the Apertura here, or in the Clausura here.
Here's where it comes into play for him. Surrounding him, Bertarame, Sergio Canales, Maxi Meza, Govea in midfield.
Maxi Meza isn't even starting now. Like, that's how loaded Monterey are.
It is a special team. It's going to create a ton of chances. To me, the moments I saw where I was like, oh man, if he's just on the same page as these midfielders, it's going to change. There were a couple really quick balls just played in behind on the ground, first time behind the San Luis center backs. And it was, if he is on his toes, understanding there's a good chance this ball gets played first time, if I'm the first one to decide I'm taking a chance on it in behind, it's going to be me and the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
There are going to be so many opportunities like that for Brandon Vasquez. His career so far taking off, which made us wonder, could he be the best American ever in Liga MX? It's early. It's early. So instead of saying yes or no, let's try to see who he'd be up against. I mean, it's Hurt Gomez to start when it comes to goal scoring.
Yeah.
Right, Dole? I mean, that's like the measuring stick. You mentioned a Golden Boot. Well, Herc's got a couple of those down south.
Herc actually only had one. I was wrong in the pre-show when I said he had two. Spiritually.
There's so, probably a CCL one in there somewhere.
He scored a lot of goals for Pachuca and for Santos Laguna. He also had one very good season with Tecos where he did not win the Golden Boot. That was the one where I thought he had won the Golden Boot. But he was the main goal scorer, and he was the focal point of the attack for a team that was very, very good. And he actually played his way into the 2010 U.S. World Cup team with his performance down in Liga MX. I don't think any other American attackers who have necessarily been the focal point of a team. Herc's the only guy who's done that. Now, in terms of a long and distinguished and title-winning career, Gringo Torres for Tigres, and remind me who else he played for,
I believe also Pachuca.
Pachuca, yeah. He played, 300 games with those two teams combined? And he won a bunch of titles. I don't think he was ever any better than, the 7th, 8th best player on those teams, if that. Guys like Edgar Castillo, Joe Corona played about 150 games. I think he won a title with that Tijuana team about a dozen years ago. Guys who had good
Yarborough's long. Yarborough's got two titles as a goalkeeper, more than 150 starts in Liga MX. I mean, even recent history, Omar Gonzalez being down there, having his way for a little while, for a couple seasons. Zendejas is still there and I think has 31 league goals overall and is doing it for America. I mean, part of this judgment call on best career in Mexico invariably depends on who you play for. And, and that's the same anywhere. But, you know, no offense to DeMarcus Beasley, who had an incredible career in Mexico. It's harder to get the same plaudits and get the same high points playing for Puebla. Harder is a huge misnomer here than it is for Monterrey, Tigres, America, etc. Like Pachuca, even being in those teams gives you an opportunity on a stage that you just don't get if you're at the bottom of the league.
Yeah. And I mean, DeMarcus was amazing as a wing back for about 4 or 5 years with that Puebla team, being the DeMarcus Beasley that we all knew and loved from U.S. national team and from watching him with the Fire and, you know, on through with PSV, etc. Great career. I think at this point, if you're looking at who has had the best overall career, though, you might have to point already to Alejandro Zendejas. Because even though he flamed out with Chivas, he was not as good for them as they wanted him to be. But now he's starting for Club America, won a title in the Apertura, won the league title. He officially, I think, he has 3 titles now across all competitions for teams down in Liga MX. Just 25, still a big part of the biggest and most famous and most successful team in Liga MX history. So that, I mean, that's who Brandon Vasquez would be chasing, presuming he keeps up anything like this pace, and presuming he doesn't move to Europe. Because remember, when he moved to Monterrey, he said, this is the fastest way for me to get to Europe, which I still don't think is actually going
to
be the
case. He wasn't kidding around. He was like, if I'm going to get there, I got to score goals in bunches, and that's happening already. Hey, shout out also to the legends. I know we're sort of focused on recent history, and it's easy to do that, but you know, throw it way back to the Marcelo Balboas, the Dom Kinnears, the Mike Sorbers even. Pumas legend. We had to even remind producer Maria, who's a massive, through family lineage, Pumas fan, that Sorber got. You know, he got an MLS or a Liga MX All-Star nod in those early days. And then Clay Kuman as well, who was the first American to captain a Liga MX team. He captained Cruz Azul back in the day. And if you don't know about Clay, C-L-E, go look him up. He's one of those North American soccer legends that when people say, hey, you guys don't have any culture, what about your history? We're bringing the mulleted boys to you right now. All the curly mullets up in your grill. So congratulations to Brandon Vasquez. Oh, speaking of Mexico, best things I saw this preseason, Chicharito at Chivas going full tears at the presentation. And as a cry guy myself, that meant so much to you, Javier. I am so happy for you. And apparently he's trying to get Vela to come to Guadalajara as well. So that could be interesting. Leagues Cup going full force. By the way, Chivas hasn't won a game so far in the current tournament. What do you think about Emil Forsberg's worldie? Not from midfield, from behind midfield. Some Pablo Ruiz to that one.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was a spectacular goal. And Emil Forsberg being the guy who he is, you know, having played more than a decade at the highest levels of the game and done it internationally for Sweden as well. I mean, that's kind of part of what a, you know, what Red Bull fans want to see. But my DMs did not fill up with Red Bulls fans celebrating that goal.
No kidding?
Yeah.
Red Bulls fans' first instinct wasn't joy?
It was not to live in the joy. Moment? Correct. Red Bulls fans have seen what other teams have done and other teams have spent. They've seen their neighbors across the Hudson use their own global scouting network to bring in extremely talented young players from around the globe on loan to play presumably large roles for NYCFC. They see the folks down in Texas maybe getting set to make a record signing for a number 9. And they are saying, why is this not happening for us? So to that point, look, I do think the Red Bulls still have another couple of signings to make this offseason. I'm not sure any of them are going to be huge, which is unfortunately, because I look at this roster and with Emil Forsberg there, and hopefully with Lewis Morgan back and somewhat healthy, and hopefully Dante Van Zier has a David Goss theorem second season. Like, this team is not far away. They've already made a couple of good signings this offseason. They've reinforced central defense. They've kept John Tolkien. They have, I think, really high level young players in central midfield. This team who have an open DP slot, like if they fill that DP slot with a regular, like a elite goal scoring number nine, you could think about this team winning something. Right? Probably not the supporter shield. I'm not sure they would be able to do it week after week after week. But this team is that piece away from like maybe a second tier team going into this season.
I was at a cafe in Brooklyn 2 weeks ago. I was standing behind some guys, and it was their take that Elias Manuel is ready to take the leap this year.
I mean, that would be very nice. That would be very nice for
Calvin Williams. I love you, man. That's still one of my. I believe you. I believe you. Elias Manuel's name is in the streets.
I just want to point out that I think a lot about the way City Football Group have leveraged their international network of clubs to get young players into the NYCFC lineup. But not all of them have panned out, but all of them have been talented, right? And it doesn't feel like Red Bull have been that same kind of club. And I was just looking through some of the names on like RB Salzburg and RB Leipzig. Like they have a ton of 19 to 22 year old center forwards who are highly rated young players who have not been able to break through into regular minutes with those clubs. Like someone like a Rocco Simic at RB Salzburg, right? He's a true number nine. He's the type of guy who, if they're going to play the 4-2-2-2, which I think they are, like he's the type of guy who would be ideal playing up top and have Van Zier playing off of him and Morgan and Forsberg playing underneath him. And if you're a Red Bull New York fan, I know for a fact that a lot of Red Bull New York fans are furious at Red Bull Global for not furnishing this team with that type of talent.
Has NYCFC done that? Have they sent guys on loan? It's been more of the vein of, we are going to buy players for NYCFC to give them the opportunity to then make the leap. You know, Yangel Herrera was a good example. I'm trying to think of good examples of that developmental pipeline. Tati Castellanos was among the best. Look, for Girona, you have to say Herrera might be one of the best, but Tati overall, you know, whether mm-hmm. it be price and level he's playing at now and impact in La Liga,
I mean
he's that guy, but where else has that guy been? Like in this same vein that you're talking about of, we own at our quote-unquote parent club this very good player that needs an opportunity. We're going to send him down.
I mean, the way NYCFC have done it is more, or City Football Group have done it, is more with guys like Santi Rodriguez, who right. was purchased and then loaned to NYCFC. And then when it became clear that he's actually kind of an ideal fit for, you know, a high-level MLS team, they made the purchase outright, and now he's a member of that team.
That was at Torque, though, right?
It was a Torque, yeah. And that's a club, even though they don't have the moniker, Torque is owned by NYCFC in the same way that I believe Girona are. So it's just like that type of thing is sitting there, I think, for the Red Bulls to exploit. And they haven't done it. And like I said, after this goal, there were a couple people saying Emil Forsberg is going to be the newcomer of the year. There were an order of magnitude more people saying, where are the rest of our signings? And I think that's entirely fair if you're a Red Bull fan.
I think so too. I was sort of quibbling with you about the manner in which you bring them in. But that's not the quibble for Red Bulls fans, right? It's not about the manner. They're saying, we don't care how you do it. We just want you to do it. Go try to take advantage of this core that we've built and this defense that clearly is elite in MLS and marry that with attacking production. God knows I love Lewis Morgan. Can you rely on him? We don't know yet. I mean, your early bet would probably hedge toward no just because of the injuries. Van Zier, exact same position for other reasons. Forsberg, love the full field goal. That's not what I would want to see if I was Red Bulls fans. I would want to see him arriving in the box at the right time, being cultured in around the box, simple finishes, setting up his teammates for the same. Like, those are the things over the course of the season the Red Bulls need to make that leap. All right, let's keep it going here. Did you see Christian Ramirez's tattoo on the back of his right calf? Impossible is an opinion in beautiful cursive script. Directly below that, an image that reflects that mantra perfectly. It's Christian Ramirez holding up the MLS Cup trophy with a bursting cross beneath him. This looks like a freaking photograph. And the first thing I thought when I saw Ramirez's tattoo was, God, there was another crew player I remember getting a tattoo after MLS Cup in 2020. Who was it? Lucas Zelarayán popped up in my face. I went and looked up his tattoo, and boy, I must have remembered that being way more impressive than it actually was. In comparison, the Zelarayán tattoo is like clip art compared to this Sistine Chapel-esque art from Christian Ramirez. Doyle.
I mean, I'm not a tattoo guy. Maybe I'll have a midlife crisis and start getting tattoos.
They tattooed, it looks like faces, but it's believable behind him in the foreground.
I got to say, Christian Ramirez has to do this tattoo artist a solid and put his name in or her name in business out there, because this is incredible. You're right. It looks like a photograph that's like lithographed onto his calf. It is like the cleanest looking tattoo I think I have ever seen in my life.
What would you tattoo on your body to commemorate an event in your own life?
Oh, okay.
Would it be riding a children's bicycle into another supporter at a Red Bulls pre and or post tailgate? What would be your moment of brilliance?
So that was bike jousting after the 2008 MLS Cup.
I knew there was a technical term. Bike jousting sounds exactly.
I was already in my 30s and had a sense of self-preservation that my younger comrades did not. So I did not partake in the bike jousting other than to absolutely egg it on. Just 100%.
Just a witness. We'd love to hear from you. What would you tattoo on yourself? What's the big moment of your life? But congratulations to Christian Ramirez, who lifted MLS Cup. But is MLS Cup better than the Supporters' Shield? Just ask Matt Miazga. He seems pretty sure, based on an appearance on Football Americas, that the Shield is more important. And he's your ideological brethren, Doyle.
Yeah, for the Shield. I agree with Matt Miazga that the Shield is the best representation of who the best team in MLS is in any given year. That said, the greatest teams of all time go out there and win both. And also, if Matt Miazga really thinks that, he should go out there and get a Supporter Shield tattoo and try to one-up Christian Ramirez. I mean, I think that is... those are the table stakes at this point.
The other thing is that he might have wanted to consider with that mindset is that, well, I guess if he thinks the Shield's more important, it's okay to be suspended for MLS Cup playoff games by your own hand. But hey, another year for FC Cincinnati. They're reloading. We'll see what they can do to replace Brandon Vasquez. FC Dallas are trying to get their number 9, so let's dig right in. According to Tom Bogert, Fabrizio Romano is also on this. I think Romano's saying it's a little bit further along, and Tom is being... cautious and probably smartly so. FC Dallas nearing a club record deal to sign Croatian international forward Petar Musa from Benfica, says sources. Dallas will pay roughly $9.5 million for the transfer. No deal is finalized yet, but Dallas has been working on this for weeks. And Fabrizio is saying the deal is verbally agreed, and apparently other European teams are in for Musa, but Dallas are going to get it done. Musa's 25. He's bounced around a little bit in Europe, some in the Czech Republic. Then he made the jump to Benfica, where he's mostly been a sub, but a very productive sub. For instance, 6 goals and 2 assists in 890 minutes this season. Like, when he's on the field, he scores. I think he had an appearance recently where it was 2 minutes, and he scored twice. 6 caps with Croatia. This is the profile of the player. Finisher, big, physical, lead the line, number 9 for Ferreira or Camungo or Velasco when he's back, or whoever it is, to play underneath and feed Doyle. This might be it. This might be the elevating signing FC Dallas has needed for a few years / forever.
Yeah, and this is a signing in particular that all those Red Bull fans were pointing out and saying, like, if Dallas is going out and doing this, why aren't we?
I know, it's just funny.
You know, and Dallas have done such great work over the past decade of developing and selling players and putting themselves into the global transfer market in a real way, that now they can come up and approach a team like Benfica and say, okay, let's talk numbers on that guy. And, you know, to their credit, when the player hears that, the player is now interested as well. Like, that's the work Dallas have done over the past decade.
I mean, it's not inconceivable that if you were to go to FC Dallas and have two good seasons, even at 27, you could then make a jump back to Europe. And it seems clear what Petar Musa needs is faith.
Yeah.
He needs to be in a place where he is the dude. And that has to be super attractive to him for Dallas to come in and say, hey, look, you've been a sub. You've been sort of in and out. You've never been given an opportunity to be the guy. Service is built around feeding you. Come to Dallas, man. Yep. You are that guy.
Yep. And I think that is probably the biggest selling point, that and good money and checks that don't bounce.
He loves Frisco. He's a big...
Right. Well, I mean, there is very good Lebanese food in Frisco.
It's growing, man. It truly is. It's changed.
So I think it makes sense in that regard. The fit in terms of how Nico Estevez has played is the fascinating part. And we were talking about this in the group chat a little bit, Andrew. And there's a real sense now that Dallas might be shifting to a 3-5-2. For this year. And if they get this signing across the line, and I'm not going to give you a huge scouting report on Petar Musa. I've seen maybe three games of him and then watching the clips and looking at the underlying numbers. And from all of that, he looks like maybe probably a Yakumakis type of center forward. But if you pair that type of center forward with Jesus Ferreira in a two, I think those are your two star attacking DPs, and they fit together, right? Like, I think that is Jesus Ferreira's best position as a second forward. And Musa is obviously a lead the line classic target forward. And then also, if you're going to switch to a 3-5-2, you can put Paul Areola in as a right wing back. And I think Areola is essentially the third DP on this team with Velasco hurt. And right wing back is Areola's best position. Left wing back is a little more iffy. I don't think Marco Farfan adds enough in attack. I think they would probably want to go out and address that. But you can see it coming together and sort of operating in a different way than what we saw the last 2 years from FC Dallas, where especially in 2022, it was very dogmatic 4-3-3 positional play. Don't take too many risks. And we actually saw that in the friendly WeeBee against Inter Miami. And it was Logan Farrington, the rookie that they took in the first round of the draft. I think they took him, what, fourth overall, something like that. He was playing as a center forward, and he was running in behind time after time after time against Miami. And, like, that's something that we did not see from them enough the past 2 years. Because when you're playing with Jesus Ferreira as your only center forward, Jesus Ferreira's got speed, but he doesn't use it to stretch the defense. He doesn't use it to get in behind. He comes back and combines and then uses his quickness to sort of ping, ping, ping his way up the field. It's a different format. It's a different game model for how you want to play. And I think it bodes well for Dallas if that is the direction they're going to go in.
The only time we ever really saw that consistently was into the season when Bernie Camungo got on that heater.
Yeah.
And just was into that channel consistently, but often from right wing.
Yep.
Not always from that forward position. Now imagine in that 3-5-2 we're talking about, Musa, Camungo behind him, Ferreira tucked in there, Ferreira able to play both sort of creator, but also late arriving runner. And we've seen he's so good finding those little gaps to come in for that first time finish. And then Camungo sort of being a running mate, a channel runner for Musa. That's where cutbacks come from. All of a sudden, you've got crossing from both wing backs and the opportunity for cutbacks from them in combination play. Yadamendi and Paxton Pomykal controlling the midfield, but with an extra center back behind them to give them cover. I mean, it's interesting to see what Nico Estevez will do. I just want him to take the handcuffs off just a little bit. To give the attacking players in this team, one, a little bit more freedom to express themselves within the system, but also positionally, just a snugger fit for their strengths.
Yeah.
Now, there is a little bit of news that it just rolled through, or maybe I missed it. I guess it's from January 25th, but we're talking about left back, perhaps another center back to add depth to that three center back rotation, if that's indeed how they're going to play. Patrickson Delgado signed on loan from Independiente Valle. I mean, he's 20. He's been with Young Ajax last year, but he can play defensive mid. He's played center back, and he's played left back. Feels like a depth coverage signing for all those spots. The other name that I just keep coming back to, just I'm curious to see, is Inesali, who's got international caps at the tender age of, I think, 17.
Mm-hmm.
What should Dallas's expectations be with this group, assuming they sign Musa?
With this group, I think you don't make a record signing and not expect to compete. And that's a little bit tough because they are going to miss Velasco for most, if not all, of the season. And he was, over the past 2 years, he's been such a big part of the good moments that they've had. But if you look at the rest of this roster, they would have high-end answers in a lot of spots. Still maybe two moves away from entering that top echelon. But that's not, like, two moves is nothing. You could get that done in a week. So I think that this would bode very, very well for Dallas's hopes to I don't want to say bounce back, to level up, right? Because it seems like basically since 2016, they have been at the same spot where it's like, oh man, they're almost there. Oh, if they could add that one guy, and it was supposed to be Frank O'Hara 5 years ago, and you know, it was supposed to be Velasco at one point. And last year, Iaramendi is going to change everything. And like, Iaramendi made it better, but you still had that lack of magic in the attacking third.
Go ahead. Ariola and Legette.
Yeah.
When they brought them in. I mean, I think back 2 years ago to the Dallas team, they got 53 points. You know, great defense, middling attack, really did it on tight margins. And then last year's team finished seventh. And again, it was tight margins for them because they didn't find the goals at the rate that other elite teams in the Western Conference did. I mean, plus four goal differential. I think to your point about leveling up, it's top four. It's a home match in the playoffs regardless. But I think a better balance between being able to prevent chances for opponents, but also better exert their own style of play in the attacking third.
Yeah.
This could be a huge signing. $9.5 million, nothing to sniff at. A guy sort of in the Yakumakis mold of like prime, early prime, at a big club in Europe, not getting the opportunities he wants. If you give them to him here, maybe he's going to explode. Petar Musa, we will tell you, locked in on that one. All right, more around the transfer world. LAFC, we said, are they cooking or are they crumbling? Well, John Thorington says, we are cooking, technically baking, because it's not out of the oven now. Quote, I think the heavy lifting has been done. The announcements are to come. John Thorington called it the busiest offseason he has ever had, which is just John trolling Tom Bogert because Tom doesn't have any of these scoops yet. So news from Sky Sports. Don't know if this is real. Divock Origi's loan from AC Milan will be terminated to allow him to join Los Angeles FC. We've heard about the Omar Campos stuff. Apparently, they're trying to get Carlos Vela back, but nothing official there. Kellen Acosta definitely won't return. David Ochoa is on trial. Danny Bawanga, no transfer has materialized there. And the announcements are coming. What's your guess? Three announcements. You don't have to name players. Just give me like positions and a profile.
I mean, there's so much smoke about the Origi thing. I think that he will be one of them, and I think that they would probably be identifying him as a center forward, not as a... He's played on both wings throughout his career. I think they would see him as a center forward, and he could run with Bawanga, assuming that Bawanga's still around.
With Oliveira in there, that is a really difficult front line to deal with, just from a physical ability perspective.
Yeah, so I think center forward, left back, and central midfield are the three spots that I would be shocked if it... I mean, they should add at other spots, but like those have to be the first three that are on
another
the
winger?
Whiteboard.
I think you got to have another winger in that.
Absolutely, though. I mean, they have, you know, Nathan Ordaz, I thought was very good in stretches in snippets down the stretch last year. They have Christian Torres coming through their academy as well. Like, maybe this is the year that LAFC finally... It's probably not. I'm just saying. But like, maybe this is the year they finally trust their academy kids a little bit. So another winger, I think a backup, a young backup for Ilya Sanchez, for sure. And then... I'm not sure they have a number two goalkeeper at this point. So they got, I mean, they still got a lot of stuff to do, Weeby.
I'd like to ask everyone to just have a moment of silence here for the next few seconds. Achiache Hector Herrera currently working through a groin injury. Doyle on the field in late March at the earliest. He's in Europe to get treatment. You know, that is tough. That's tough to hear.
Were you burying the Houston Dynamo's 2024 season right there? Is that what that moment of
no,
silence
No, I just
was?
It was a moment of sadness for all of us who wanted to see that same Achiache, that beautiful soccer that they had played at the end of the year, with him being the orchestrator and sometimes the finisher, but more often than that, the conductor. I mean, I just want as much of that as I can get. And you also wonder what this season will look like for Houston. There are some big question marks. I mean, Corey Barrett is gone, and now Sebas Ferreira has to come back in and earn the good graces of not just Ben Olsen, but you would think like the whole locker room, the entire group, and your inspirational presence. The guy that with his words, with his actions, with just his being, helped turn the club around, is hurt and getting treatment in Europe and is not a young buck. I mean, it's just, I'm not saying the season's over. I'm not saying it's a death blow of any sort. It is just a big bummer. And, you know, fortunately, if you're Pat Onstad and Ben Olsen, you look at last year and you had some time to get some other guys in the mix. You didn't have to sell Coco Karaskia, at least not yet. Kovalchuk got time to integrate himself and figure some things out if that's where the depth needs to come from. Bossy could technically move inside to the two number eight, so I think he's so much better tucking in off that right wing. You have some solutions, but gosh, there's no real solve for not having Hector Herrera on the field.
I mean, not only that, but they haven't upgraded any spots so far this offseason. I expected the Dynamo to be able to move on from Ferreira. And then to, you know, I'm just because I love watching Coco Karaskia, I'm glad they haven't sold him. I hope they stay or he stays with the Dynamo throughout 2024. I think he makes them better. He makes the league more fun to watch. He's that type of player. But like, I thought the offseason plan was going to be to move on from Ferreira, to sell Karaskia, and then to go out and get two or three high level pieces for that attack.
I agree.
And they haven't been able to do anything. And my understanding is like they're constrained by the cap and maybe don't have the amount to invest in new signings, a Peter Musa type of new signing. And that's tough because I was about to say Houston were so close last year. They won a trophy last year. And they have the pieces to build on that and be even better this year. But it's kind of all gone. It's all gone sideways this offseason with the lack of new additions. And then Achiache being injured to start the year. And hopefully he can return sooner rather than later. But like, hopefully at the same time, they don't rush him back and turn a 4 or 6 week injury into something that hampers him throughout the entire year.
I think you're going to see a lot of teams early on play similarly, especially in Houston, to the way LAFC did in the playoffs, where they just said, hey, here's the ball. You can do all your special things up until the final third, but we are going to be structured and we're going to break up the middle of the field.
I mean,
but
you're not going
to have Achiache to break it open. Like
Houston will just say, here's the ball right back. I don't care. You can sit in a you can sit in a low block. Well, it's Ben Olsen, man. Ben Olsen
should have done that against LAFC then.
No. They did the right thing against LAFC. They constantly got into good spots against LAFC. Quinonez just was not at the level he needed to be.
Well, that was unpredictable. We couldn't have predicted that.
Right. But the point is, with Achiache and Karaskia and everybody out there, they were able to dictate where the game was going to be played. They were just missing that last piece to unlock the defense. And we thought that they would go out and get that piece. They have not done that so far. What I'm saying is that without Achiache, that game model is not even on the table. And I think that we know Ben Olsen well enough as a manager to know that he will be like, all right, well, if that doesn't give us... Yeah, you know, if we don't have the ability to win that way, we're not going to try to play that way. So you guys can take the ball, and you guys can try to impose, and we'll hit you on the break. And if Hector Herrera is out for a month and a half, then that's the version of the Dynamo I expect to see for a month and a half.
All right, interesting one to follow. TBD, no Achiache, no legend picking up the ball off the center backs and playing those combinations through the middle of the field with Karaskia and Artur with Bossy tucking in. Could be a tough start for the Houston Dynamo. Sounders, big move for them. Number nine position was a little bit of a bugaboo last year. Was it going to be Raul Ruiz Diaz? Well, darn it, he's hurt again. Okay, is it Jordan Morris? Well, sometimes he and Leo Chu have incredible chemistry, and sometimes it's just not there. Here comes Danny Musovski, who, according to The Athletic and Tom Boger, is going to sign a free agent deal with the Sounders. Musovski, 28. We've talked about him a ton on this show. It's because wherever he is, whether it's RSL or LAFC, he just seems to score. 1,600 minutes last year across all comps for RSL, 9 goals, 5 assists. Per 90 minutes for LAFC, very good. Just over 2,200 minutes, 13 goals, 6 assists. Though this feels like the perfect sort of can start, doesn't have to start, should always be productive, and we know exactly what we're going to get from him. Sort of player in number 9 that this team needs with Ruiz Diaz in the last year of his contract, and Morris probably better on the left wing.
Yeah, this is just... this is just great work from Craig Weibel and that front office there. They now have more than adequate depth at, all across that front line with the addition of De La Vega and now the addition of Musovski. We know that their midfield was one of the best in the league last year in terms of controlling play. They just lacked that cutting edge, and they went out and they attempted to address, attempted to add that cutting edge. And the thing with Musovski is, like, he's not going to be a star, but he puts the ball in the back of the net. He knows how to let the guys who do the heavy lifting do the heavy lifting. He finds the right spots to finish the playoff. It's just really, really good work. I think he's going to fit very well because, you know, like, I like Jordan Morris. I thought Jordan Morris was actually pretty good as a center forward last year. He's going to miss time. Raul Ruiz Diaz is not the guy he was 2 years ago. Even if he gets on a heater, you can't play him 3,000 minutes this year. So you needed that. You needed a guy who was in his prime and has been productive. And the fact that they were able to do that within the league, with, you know, via free agency, so you don't have to pay another transfer fee on top of the $6 million they paid for De La Vega. This is just what you... is what you want to see from a GM. And it's what you want to see from a roster build. And I'm sure Brian Schmetzer is very happy with it, because this also gives them the freedom to play in a two, which I don't think they necessarily had before this signing. And that's not what Brian Schmetzer has preferred. I think he's preferred the 4-2-3-1, and I think that'll continue to be the case this year. But we saw in the past, in 2021, when Ladero was out, they went to a 3-5-2 for that season. They ended up close to 60 points, I want to say. So they have that club in the bag now, which is important. And the Sounders, I'm struggling to find a reason not to have them in the top tier going into this season.
To me, easy money in the top tier. You think about if they want to go to that 3-5-2 at times, that's why you sign Nathan, John Bell as well. I mean, Arriaga is still on the roster too, to speak of depth. Left back, okay, Nuhu in your four. Or Baker Whiting, but if you're in the five, you want somebody up and down, Reed Baker Whiting is your guy. And this gives time for Pedro De La Vega, too. Yep. You know, could Morris be your starting striker all year? Sure. He definitely has that capability, but he can play left wing, and then you don't put pressure on De La Vega to start his career in a new place, new environment, still such a young player. And it occurred to me as we were talking through all this, you know, veteran, proven goal scorer at the nine, and a young DP on the left wing who could make a difference on his own, both as a passer and a goal scorer. That's like, if you're a Dynamo fan, exactly what you would have been praying for.
Right? Like this, if the Dynamo had done this exact thing, we would be saying, like,
even
at
a lesser degree.
Yeah. It's, I don't want to keep piling on the Dynamo. Hopefully they'll be able to get something. I mean, what do we know? We all thought they would be 12th in the West last year, and they were, damn near champions of the West. They had a fantastic 2023 out of nowhere. Maybe they could do the same in 2024. Let me put you on the spot, Weeby. As of right now, are the Sounders a clear favorite in the Western Conference?
Yes.
Yeah.
LAFC are sort of mid roster shuffle. I think that's what you would, I mean, they've got, they're discarding cards at a record pace and saying, don't worry, we're about to draw. I'll want to see those, but certainly I think their track record says that they'll make big signings, but those signings have to integrate pretty quickly. St. Louis, you know, four words, regression to the mean. Nah, just kidding, St. Louis fans, but certainly not the best team in the conference. Houston, not keeping up with the Sounders. And then name me a team up and down that has the depth and quality that the Sounders do in addition to the experience and tradition of just like when push comes to shove, we win.
Yeah.
When the summer comes, we win. When guys are gone for international duty, somebody steps up and we generally win. I think it's their conference to take.
As of right now, I agree with you, though. I remain interested in seeing what the LA clubs do. I'm very interested in seeing what Kansas City do. We haven't heard a peep about how they're going to use that open DP slot that they have since Gotti Kindle left.
Well, Duncan McGuire is not a DP, but he's trying to make DP money, I would think, based on the goal scoring he's had over the last year, his first as a pro. According to Tom Bogert, Orlando City rejected an offer from Sheffield Wednesday for Duncan McGuire. Apparently Blackburn are now in for him hard, and Tommy Scoops is saying there's a possibility that could get done before the end of that transfer window. How big a story is this right now for Orlando City, Doyle? The possibility that they could lose Duncan McGuire before the season starts.
I mean, it's a story. It's a pretty big story because he was excellent last year. I think he's a Brandon Vasquez level striker, right? I think he's a guy who is has the quality to work his way directly into the U.S. national team picture. I expect to see him at the Olympics this summer. He is that type of guy. If they sell him, it will be for a big number. It will be for the type of number that then allows them to immediately go out on the transfer market and spend a lot of money on his replacement, probably a young DP number 9. You know, go down to Argentina or Uruguay or even Brazil with a big check and Oscar Pereja can have his pick. That said, I mean, we saw them, I don't want to say, they did something like that last year with Ramiro Henrique, right? Who they brought in on a U22 initiative signing. He, as is common, he struggled his first year in MLS. It's a new club, a new country, a new league. It is not always easy to fit right in. So anyone they go out and buy, there would be a learning curve, and that learning curve would probably hit immediately, and immediately is when Orlando City are trying to win CONCACAF Champions Cup. And given how well they played Tigres last year, and given how well they played overall in the second half of the year, they should be thinking about trying to win CONCACAF Champions Cup. So this is a pretty big one for Orlando City, and I hope they're able to get the type of deal done that keeps Duncan McGuire happy and in purple for at least another year. And then when the time is right, I hope he goes to a team that is better than Blackburn, man.
This wasn't expecting. Yeah, it is a B club.
Right.
It is a B club in the championship, and you know how much we respect and venerate such clubs. So we'll see what happens with Duncan McGuire. But I agree, look, Ramiro Henrique had a good pedigree coming in, and you know the vaunted David Goss theorem certainly applies to him. Was more of an impact sub than he was an impact starter. And Duncan McGuire's side, I get it. Like, if you're Duncan McGuire in his representation and you have interest, you should be trying to drum as much of that up as possible to encourage bids, to put yourself in a position of desirability, not just for a potential move, but because of the contract that either comes with that move or the extension that comes with staying at Orlando City. Like, this is the transfer market.
Yep.
This is the way it works. And as MLS becomes more of a player, MLS clubs are going to have to play that that back and forth pretty well, whether it comes to extending contracts at the right time or selling for the right numbers or being prepared when a guy like Duncan McGuire goes, you know, nuclear in year one and you don't have a choice. Now we'll see what Orlando City does.
I just want to say, for any other team, I'd be like, don't worry about it. They'll figure it out. But like, given the history with Orlando City and Kyle Larin, like, there, I know that there are some Orlando City fans who are freaking out a little bit just because it's gone bad for them in the past with this type of thing. So hopefully this time it's not a repeat.
Well, you could either have optimism in the preseason or freak out or both. And it's going around right now. But it was a good night for Orlando City at home against Flamengo. 1-1 draw for the Lions, at Interinco Stadium. Are Orlando the co in this situation? I don't know. I'm just kidding. 22,678 fans. You know, Brazil draws big down there in Central Florida. Ivan Angulo scored the equalizer, and it was set up by Nico Adero. So there's some good vibes to start. Inter Miami, boy, the injury vibes, not so good. Benjamin Kromoski out for 2 to 3 months to repair a sports hernia. Now, that's Kromoski and Facundo Farias already this preseason, Doyle. This for a team that was focused on, clear about, their priority to win CCC. How much does this hurt their ability to compete in that competition?
I think this actually hurts more in their ability to come out of that competition and win the Supporter Shield. Kromoski is a good player. I didn't think he was better last year than David Ruiz, their other central midfield homegrown. I'm not sure he's a starter, even if healthy, in that current mix with Gregory and Jean Mota back, and obviously Busquets there as well.
Gomez in his David Goss theorem year. And
exactly. So they have the ability to cover for this in tournament play. It's in league play where all of a sudden you're a little bit thinner than you were 2 weeks ago. And that's where that, like, the grind of the league season, it wears teams down.
You think Tata Martino is a Matt Miazga-esque shield truther? Because I kind of think he's the opposite.
So
I'm guessing.
I would say that, except the first year that there was a real shield race where both teams were going at it and, like, not resting players and not...
Red Bulls Atlanta, for those of you looking
2018.
For
2018, yeah. Red Bulls Atlanta. I mean, you could argue that's still the best shield race we've ever had with those two teams. Like, they both clearly wanted it. And that was Tata Martino, man. So I think if you asked him which trophy would you prefer, he would say MLS Cup. I think they would all say CONCACAF Champions Cup first. Cup.
Leagues Cup might even sneak its way in there.
Yeah. But I Tata Martino cares about the Supporter Shield. And the other thing is, Leo Messi won La Liga 10 times. And after about the ninth or 10th of those, Zinedine Zidane, who was the Real Madrid manager at that point, said what they're... And of course, Real Madrid won, what was it, 4 Champions League titles in 5 years in the middle of last decade. Zidane said what Messi and Barcelona are doing is more impressive than what we're doing, because to win the league is the ultimate thing. To go out there and week after week after week and be the best team is the ultimate thing. And that has always been what Messi has been about. I don't think this team would ever conceivably, I don't want to say blow off, but deprioritize the Supporter Shield unless it just ended up, you know, being so far out of reach by September that they said, okay, let's get everybody rested and fit for the playoffs. I just don't think Messi's never been built like that. And from what we saw of Tata in 2017, 2018, he's not built like that either.
Oh, the Shield propagandists having their day, bringing Zinedine Zidane into the mix. Lionel Messi, he will clearly care. This is incredible. By the way, starting 11 is out for Al Hilal right now. This friendly is about to kick off. Who do you think's in the midfield? You haven't seen?
I have not seen.
So it's a 5-3-2, Messi, Suarez up top. Of course, Messi wearing the C. On the back line, Alba, Allen, Christophe, Aviles, Yedlin, Callander, and goal. Who is the midfield three?
I'll say Busquets, Gregory, and Gressel.
Oh, 2 out of 3. Busquets and Gressel, Gregory on the bench. Your boy, better than Benjamin, David Ruiz is starting in this match in that three. Doing some and running for is Sergio.
Is it Messi and Suarez up top?
It is.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've seen from these first two friendlies for Miami is struggles at creating danger in behind. They just are not able to get any run, especially up the gut. And I do wonder if there's a solution for that if they're playing a 3-5-2. In fact, I kind of doubt there's a solution for that. Whereas if they go back to the 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 even, then you have Robert Taylor making those outside in runs as a left winger, similar to the runs you were talking about Kamungo making for Dallas at the tail end of last year. So Kumungo was doing it on the right side, Taylor would do it on the left side. That, I mean, that is, I don't want to say the big story from the first two friendlies is that Miami are already down two rotation pieces, injuries. But the tactical story from the first two friendlies is they do not threaten in behind. They have to figure that out because even Messi, Suarez, Busquets, Alba, as great as they are on the ball, they're not going to tiki-taki their way to three goals a game in MLS in this day and age. They have to get someone who makes the game big off the ball for them.
News from Tom Bogert, literally, like, I don't know, 35 minutes ago. Sources, DC United finalizing a deal to sign Finland international defensive midfielder Matti Peltola. Washington Post first report on this one. Peltola will be a young DP. It's a free transfer. 21, 5 caps with Finland, 96 appearances with Helsinki. That's the final DP spot occupied for DC United. I can't sit here and tell you that I have any insight whatsoever on Helsinki or Peltola, but how's he fit into this roster in theory, Doyle?
Well, they were thin at central midfield, right? The only guys they had in central midfield are Russell Knaus, Matthias Klik, and then their homegrown kid, Jeremy Garay, who is 20 years old and played a ton for Loudon, but has never made an MLS appearance. That's the entirety of their deep central midfield depth. So it was an area of clear need. I can't pretend to know anything about Peltola. I do know that DC keeps signing Finnish guys, which is a little bit weird, but okay. But hopefully he...
Something's going on in that locker room for Finland. You know,
right?
Robin Ludd's in there just talking a big game. Pukki arrived now. He's like, look, guys, it could be nice for you. It could be good. Taylor's like, do you see who I'm playing with? Huh? No, sorry for Peltola. I mean, I guess he gets Benteke, so that's good.
I mean, he gets Tedku Dipietro, man.
Exactly.
So it's an area of
Stroud. Woo-wee.
It's an area of need. They still, I think, need two more bodies in that spot on the field. But hopefully the kid's good.
In Montreal, David Weiss hit us up and said, hey, any thoughts on Dominik Yankov and Matias Coccaro, I think it is, from the Argentine League, sort of a, again, to go back to this profile of players that we've seen a lot of, like, you know, $1 to $4 million signings. Yankov is going to be a TAM player, and I think Coccaro is the same, but you couldn't hold me to that. Coccaro seems like more of a, less of a volume scorer and more of an industrious number nine piece who's going to do the work defensively and make the right runs and has a decent recent record of goal scoring. Yankov's an interesting one. Born in Toronto, Doyle. He's been in Bulgaria basically winning everything for like the last 4 years. But these are sort of, this is what you expect from Montreal, going out and trying to find quality players at a price point that isn't going to break the bank, but some good pieces for Laurent Simon to work with here to start.
Yeah, I believe Yankov is already a capped Bulgarian international, multiple caps, right? And he is ostensibly an attacking midfielder, which is the one spot they really, really needed to upgrade. Coccaro, look, I had hoped that they would give Vincent the chance to win that job from the start.
He might still have a chance to do it.
He might. But now they have, with Coccaro, now they have between Vincent and Okwadwo Opoku and... I'm sorry,
name.
Mason Toy.
Yes,
Sanisi Ibrahim. Like, they have depth.
Chinoso Afor? Ariel Lassiter?
Right.
Let's go.
They have depth and options up top. They have the ability to move one of those guys, maybe pick up a little bit of GAM as well for it. So it... Like, I like this type of work from...
I'm looking at the roster and, like, this is vintage Weeby Sicko, but, like, I'm liking it.
Right?
I'm liking it. Laurent Simon comes in here. They actually go play with the ball again, which apparently is what they always wanted to do, but hired the wrong person to do. And now Victor Wanyama isn't just, like, a hood ornament on the car. He's actually going to go back to being the engine and making it all work. I'm here for it.
And they have
Schwanier, left wing back, maybe, or depends, playing one of those midfield positions.
I mean, I think Schwanier is going to be the left wing back, because if I look at it, like, I think Wanyama comes back in and has the role he had in 2022. And then they have in between Nathan Saliba and Rita Zuhir, who was awesome apparently on loan in San Antonio last year and who's been starting for them in preseason. They have two super high upside young central midfielders who they could sell, you know, develop and sell like they did with Kone for $5 to $8 million in the next couple of years. So I think that they have, and of course, Sam Piet is still there as well. So I think they have a lot more answers than they did last year. And hopefully, Laurent Simon really can be the next Wilfred Nancy. Hopefully, he can have that type of effect on their overall approach, how they play, but also the development of the young players, because they lost that entirely last year.
I agree. Letuk, as well as Lassi Lapalainen, the Finland connections just percolating throughout Major League Soccer. But with some big signings for Montreal, a big extension announced for Santi Moreno in Portland. What a wild roller coaster ride it's been for Santi and the Portland Timbers. Last year, he was beefing with Gio, and then he was was trying to force a transfer, right? Mm-hmm. He like didn't show up, and then he fired his representation, and now he's signed to a contract extension through 26 with a club option in 27. It was pretty clear last year, Doyle, he was just so much more impactful in the middle of the field. What's this extension say to you about the Timbers and what they see Santi Moreno, not what he is now, but what he can be? Because I don't think you sign this unless you see more upside.
Yeah, I think upside either as a guy who is a high-level starter in MLS, or upside as a guy who still could have a ton of value as an outgoing transfer. And we saw that, as you said, we saw that down the stretch under Miles Joseph, who's now in Charlotte, by the way. I think did we touch on that on the last show?
A couple of shows ago with all the shakeup in Charlotte. They're definitely adding MLS experience to the front office.
Which is very smart. But Miles Joseph switched to a 4-3-3, played Santi as a free eight, and I thought he was awesome. I thought he was so good. Now, I still think he's very good as a winger, and I think if you look at the shape of this team right now, probably still a winger, because Phil Neville has tended to prefer a 4-2-3-1 rather than a 4-3-3 for one, and for two, they have, I think, more answers in central midfield with Diego Chara still around and Paredes and Williamson both healthy again. So whereas on the wing, it's more questions than answers.
You play him right wing or left wing, Santi?
I think probably as a right winger, but I could be talked out of that. Putting him as a playmaking inverted left winger, we didn't see it a lot under Gio Savarese, and that might be part of why Santi Moreno wasn't particularly happy under Gio. But with a player with this kind of skill set, and now with the money and security, I think there maybe be a level of comfort in how he plays. I'm hoping for the fan, you know, for Timbers fans' sake, that's what they get, because when he's on, man, he's one of the better attacking players in this league.
There's an element right now for Timbers fans of like, hey, Merritt Paulson said we were going to go explicit, whatever, we're going to make these huge signings. There's still that gap at striker. You're probably okay with Felipe Mora for now, but you'd like to have a DP come in there, and then probably a DP winger as well, or at least a significant investment. Let Dairon still be depth. Let Moreno start on either wing, and then Evander have his big season that he showed signs of last year, if he can sort of get out of his own way, and see where it goes. Curious about that left side, though. Claudio Bravo hurt, TBD as to the starter on the left wing, if it's not Moreno or Espria, but the Timbers doing a little cooking here in preseason. Anything we missed?
The Yankov deal was just made official. CF Montreal acquire midfielder Dominik Yankov. It just came through. 17 caps with Bulgaria. 23-year-old playmaking midfielder. I would expect him to slot in as Montreal's number 10 this year. That's good work. Good work from Montreal.
And from the Toronto area. So a very familiar setting for him to come back, but maybe on the other side of the rivalry. Anything we missed here? Anything you want to throw out there before we hit February, Doyle? I think by the time we hit next month, which will be later this week, we'll start to roll into really more formalized previews and push ahead to 2024. It is now, 23 days away? opening day, and I believe 9 days away till Vancouver Tigres, and only 8 days until Comunicaciones and Monterrey get CONCACAF Champions Cup started. So the clock is ticking, man. Enjoy your relative freedom, because we're putting you in the box very soon. No comment.
No comment. Sorry. I thought you were just taking us out at that point.
No, no. Enjoy your week, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday. Adios. We'll be right back.